Hi, this is Scott Unash. Thanks for listening to the Gym Class Podcast on KGYM.
Other offers, additional fees may apply where lawful. See store for details.
Coming up on the Gym Class, we talk college basketball. Mike DeCourcy from the Big Ten Network will join us, talk about the Big Ten tournament as well as the college basketball landscape. And do we need a shot clock in high school basketball in the state of Iowa? All that coming up on a Tuesday edition of the Gym Class here on KGYM. And from our studios on the southwest side, we welcome you into the Gym Class for a Tuesday here on KGYM. 1600 AM, the historic main gym, 107.5 FM, the North Gym in Cedar Rapids, and 106.3 FM. That is the South Gym in Iowa City. Scott Unash alongside Mark Dukes. Kyle Mann, our producer, here today. We are presented by Third Base Brewery at the corner of Blair's Ferry Road and C Avenue Northeast in Cedar Rapids. Locally owned and operated, and a place where families meet up again and again for a quick lunch, to catch the game after work, or bring the family for an affordable and delicious meal. Stop on by. That's Third Base. They are located at the corner of Blair's Ferry Road and C Avenue Northeast in Cedar Rapids, the presenting sponsor of the Gym Class program. We got a good one today. Mike DeCourcy is going to join us to talk some hoops in just a little bit, and then going to talk about this quite a bit today, because the rhetoric out there is, I don't know if it's growing, but at least there's a lot of debate back on social networking out there, especially after the two state tournaments, girls and boys basketball. Should there be a shot clock in the state of Iowa as far as high school basketball is concerned? We'll debate the pros and cons, and hear from you out there, because there are a lot of people lighting up social networking over the last 72 hours or so to talk about that. How are you doing today?
Good. It's an interesting topic. I'm looking forward to getting into it. We'll give you our poll question in that segment because it relates to that. But, I think folks will weigh in on different sides of this issue.
I know they will. And it's a very complex issue. There's a lot of tentacles to it, if you will, as far as both, you know, on the court and off the court, as far as a shot clock in high school basketball is concerned. There are states around that have them. South Dakota is one of those. They have a shot clock. When the Sioux City teams go up to play a South Dakota team, they have to play with the shot clock. So it's kind of like a DH there. Sometimes you play with the DH, sometimes you don't play with the DH. And we'll throw out some facts and figures with that coming up in just a little bit as well. Couple news and notes for you. Number one, wrestling fans, Iowa's Sam Stoll has been given a wild card to go into the national tournament. So Iowa will take nine wrestlers with them to Pittsburgh. Iowa State is going to take nine wrestlers with them as well to the national meet. We'll talk more about that with Mark Ironside coming up tomorrow. But I don't think a real big surprise for Sam Stoll.
No, he hasn't had a good year by any means and hasn't wrestled very much. And that appeared to be the one drawback in Stoll getting a at-large berth. But he's in it. Has a chance to get some points for Iowa. Likely won't get a great draw. But
won't be seeded, I wouldn't imagine.
No, at least he has the opportunity now.
Yeah, and I think if I was going to get a top three finish, Sam Stoll's got to get some points.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we'll talk about that with Mark Ironside coming up tomorrow. Last night, Iowa State for three quarters gave number one rated Baylor everything they wanted and more down in Oklahoma City at the Big 12 Women's Basketball Championship, the number one team in the country. And Iowa State tied them three times, just could not get the lead. And then, like many teams do, many very good teams do, they hit that extra gear, or, you know, hit the on switch, however you want to phrase it, and outscored Iowa State by about 20 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, Baylor is the number one team for a reason, or one of the top teams for a reason. And you're right, Iowa State played very, very well for at least three-fourths of that game. And the Cyclones will have a good run in the NCAA tournament, I think.
All right. And Alexa Middleton's really good. We know how good Bridget Carleton is. You know, and they needed another big scorer last night and just didn't have that one. Jones came through with some good buckets, but not enough to beat Baylor last night. Baylor did not make a three-pointer in that game. Refreshing. But when you're a foot taller than
everybody else on the interior,
maybe you don't need to do that out there. 319-366-1600. We're going to talk to Mark DeCourcy coming up in about 20 minutes or so, about 3:30 today, and get his thoughts about the Big Ten basketball tournament coming up in Chicago, as Iowa will open up on Thursday night with either Illinois or Northwestern. And that'll be the late game coming up on Thursday night in Chicago.
Yeah, trying to find a tweet from an Iowa basketball player. Nothing on Twitter.
Why is that, Mark?
Well,
the Kirk Ferentz influence?
According to beat reporters, the players decided a couple games ago to get off Twitter. Luka Garza commenting on that the outside noise, quote-unquote, wasn't really hurting the team, but it wasn't helping either. So it sounds like collectively they have decided to go the Kirk Ferentz route and not follow Twitter.
And I think that's not a bad way to go, to be honest with you.
We're already getting texts on the shot clock, and we'll get that get to your comments in that segment, but appreciate you weighing in there.
Yeah. Just to get us kind of started as far as steering the ship toward a little bit of high school basketball talk, we now know the Mr. Basketballs of the year for 2019, and it was a flat-footed tie in the voting as – it was a tie vote between DJ Carton, the Bettendorf guard, as well as Jake Hilmer, the fine player from North Lynn who's going to be going to Upper Iowa to play both basketball and baseball up there. A lot of people were very interested to see. This was going to be one of the more interesting votes that they have ever had as far as Mr. Basketball is concerned. And I was not there, but I know a couple people that were there taking part in the voting, and they said, yeah, it was very interesting. People trying to make their point on who should be. There were four or five players that got very big consideration for Mr. Basketball, but it came down in the vote, and it was a flat-footed tie.
Yes, for years, the Iowa Daily Press Association and then the Iowa Newspaper Association conducted the All-State meetings, and a couple years ago, the Iowa Sports Writers Association was formed, and that group now selects the All-State team, and it's, according to stories I've read, about 50 sports writers voting in this, and is a flat-footed deadlock between those two players, Carton and Hilmer. Congratulations to Hilmer. It's hard to deny what he did in the high school ranks, even though it was in Class 2A. Doesn't matter to me.
Doesn't matter. And I said this on the Sports View yesterday, one of the many points I had. It was a long one. 30 years I've been doing this, and Jake Hilmer was one of the most amazing people that I have ever covered. 2,332 points, all-time leader in steals, all-time leader in assists, all-time leader for single season as far as assists are concerned. And you think about it, and those numbers might not be equaled, the steals and the assists.
I mean, is he as good as DJ Carton? It's immaterial to me. Is he as good or better than Patrick McCaffrey? I don't think it matters. You recited the statistics. They won a state championship. I think he's very deserving.
I would agree. Very deserving on that. And but you always have the big cities versus the small schools argument as far as Mr. Basketball is concerned. And I've been told many times by many different voters that you don't know how close it was for player X to lose to player Y, who went on to a career, you know, playing NAIA or Division III, who almost beat out a Division I, you know, future all-conference player just because the way the voting plays out.
It's quite a debate. I've sat in on many all-state meetings, boys and girls. And, in fact, I was in on the meeting when the committee decided to introduce Mr. Basketball in the state of Iowa. Terry Hersom, Cedar Rapids native from the Sioux City Journal, actually broached the subject. And I think it was unanimous, in my recollection, to introduce it. Todd Birkenpass from Maple Valley, and former Iowa Hawkeye, the first Mr. Basketball.
1981.
Yeah, and each and every year, well, not each and every year. Sometimes it was pretty obvious.
Oh, yeah, there have been times it's very obvious.
Al Lorenzen was pretty obvious, as I recall, from Kennedy. Other years, not so much.
No. 319-366-1600. I know we got an email here from Jim. We'll get to the phone here in a moment. Asking about Jake Hilmer, was he recruited by Division I schools? Yes, at the end, there were a few Division I schools that came calling to inquire. And there's no doubt Jake Hilmer could have played Division I, but he wanted to play both baseball and basketball. He has equal love for both sports. And he can do that at Upper Iowa.
You can do worse than Upper Iowa.
Absolutely. Very good Division II school up in the Northern Sun Conference. He's got a second question we'll get to coming up in just a little bit. 319-366-1600. We're going to talk to Mike DeCourcy coming up in about 15 minutes or so. We're going to get into the shot clock right after we talk a little Iowa basketball. Wally's got a question today. Hi, Wally.
Hi. Kind of a question, comment. Okay, in regards to the Nebraska-Iowa game. Now, I don't think I'm trying to say that we could have won or the officiating caused the loss, but what I thought I saw in that game was that there were no offensive fouls called, but yet number zero for Nebraska, a lot of times when he was penetrating, dribble penetration, he used his left hand to push off the defender to create some separation to either drive to the basket or pull up and shoot. And I know James Harden gets away with it, James Harden for the Houston Rockets in the NBA, but this is college basketball. And isn't that supposed to be an offensive foul? And I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Is it or is it not an offensive foul?
Breaking news, Iowa players get away with it too.
Everybody gets away with it. And Iowa was a road team. You're not going to get as many calls when you're on the road. If the officials believe it is a...
if there's an advantage gained.
Yes.
Type thing, right?
And many, many times there is contact between an offensive player and a defensive player in there.
It's like holding in football. You could call that little arm bar damn near every time down the court.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it just depends. And in the official's eye, at least for that, it was not an advantage gained. 316 here. Let's go to Joel in Muscatine. Wants to chime in about Mr. Basketball. Of course, Muscatine, the home of last year's winner.
Yes.
Mr. Joe
just
Wieskamp.
Relinquished his crown.
I don't think it was as close of a vote last year.
No.
Given last year's class. And So I think one of the things with Mr. Basketball, and I never voted, I never was admitted into the esteemed Sports Writers Association, but one of my mentors in college was the aforementioned Terry Hersom. I, of course, went to school in Sioux City and interned at the Sioux City Journal as a young wannabe journalist. And we talked about I moved to Sioux City the year after Kirk Heinrich graduated. And I believe Kirk was also a co-Mr. Basketball with Nick Collison.
That is correct.
Their senior year. So that was always a topic discussed in that particular part. And I think the thing is with DJ, and I saw him play most of his high school career, covered him, in the Mississippi Athletic Conference. I never saw Hilmer play in person. Tried to get to do a game this year, but I couldn't. And I think the thing is, though, is Jake Hilmer, like you guys mentioned, if he had gone – to a big, I mean, he could have transferred to a Lynn Mar or a Xavier or a different school in the Marion Cedar Rapids Metroplex if had he wanted to. And I think he would have been the best player or in that conversation with Patrick McCaffrey and Carton in 4A based off the people I've talked to and respect in that area. And ultimately, DJ Carton did just that. I mean, realistically, he should have been in the conversation for Mr. Basketball in the state of Illinois. He's a Geneseo, Illinois native who moved to Bendorf.
What?
That never happens. Oh, but that only happens in the private schools, guys. Don't you know all the big hullabaloo about, you know, the private school multiplier, all that stuff that's going crazy right now. But
That'll be a discussion in the next week's edition of the Gym Class.
But I think the thing is you have to applaud a kid for just sticking with his community, much like our native Joe Wieskamp did. Lots of people thought he was going to jump ship, you know, and move to an Iowa City West program, or you have a situation where you had the young player at Regina who chose to enroll in Iowa City West this last couple years. Is it Bronze? Is that his last name?
Yes.
Evan Bronze, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the thing is reward a kid like a Jake Kilmer for, you know, not just having exceptional skills and for all intents and purposes would be a mid-major Division One basketball player had he not wanted to be a dual sport athlete. I think it's a big step forward for the state to recognize that there are sometimes more than one player who have earned that. But I will say this, and Mark, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I find it hard to believe that there wasn't this wasn't a wag the dog type situation where there weren't 25 guys going, all right, I'm going to vote Carton. Let's get 25 guys to vote Homer so we can split this vote. I firmly believe that those conversations were had, although nobody will ever admit it. But maybe that's the conspiracy theorist.
Never know out there. Hey, Joel, before let you go, should there be a shot clock?
100% yes. 100% yes. Joe Wieskamp never loses to Pleasant Valley in high school. There's a shot clock. Pleasant Valley should every win they've had the last 8 years should be vacated because there's been no shot clock. It needs to happen. The shot clock is a necessity. It penalizes the players and the teams that attempt to play basketball in the modern fashion that it's meant to be played. These kids are going from AAU. Oh, you guys got me on the soapbox here. These kids come from AAU, and then they come into the high school season, and they have to play a completely different style because you have teams holding the ball for a minute and 45 seconds per possession. It's counterintuitive to everything that these guys are learning and continue to play if they want to matriculate as basketball players. But yet we've got these coaches who slow it down and teach their own. You know, they're playing within the rules of the game. But listen, if Nebraska can figure out a way to have a shot clock, Iowa needs to figure out a way to have a shot clock. South Dakota has one, for goodness sake. Like, it has to happen.
You know, put Joel down as a yes, an affirmative. Yes.
And I will be a panelist on any discussion you guys want. I've studied it ad nauseum, as well as the multiplier system. So put me on your list. I'll talk anytime you want me to.
Thanks, Joel. Right, appreciate it. 319-366-1600.
Couple comments in regards to Joel's comments.
I was kidding about we're going to have a discussion about high school recruiting.
Well, one year, Scott Plonke, you'll remember him, center for Dubuque Wallert. He lived in Potosi, Wisconsin.
There were three starters in 1984 for Dubuque Waller that lived outside the state of Iowa.
And Joel, you're right. On the committees that I used to serve on, I don't know if it's still the case because, again, the Sports Writers Association has taken this over. Maybe it wasn't a 25-25 split. But I go back to 1984 at the Gazette when we were selecting our Athlete of the Year. We looked at Al Lorenzen and Marv Cook, and I don't remember what the vote was. I doubt it was a flat-footed tie, but it was a situation where we collectively said, we cannot give this Athlete of the Year to one over the other. And you had to weigh a lot. Lorenzen was a one-sport athlete, McDonald's All-American. Marv Cook, all-around athlete.
Yep.
Terrific at Iowa. All-pro in the NFL. I don't think we got it wrong, but those are the discussions that are had in committees like that.
319-366-1600. All right. Joel talked about it. He gave his yes vote on this. What do you think out there? We got about 7 minutes or so before we talk to Mike DeCourcy, and then we're going to talk about it afterwards as well. Should there be a shot clock? This kind of caught a little bit more steam over the weekend. The popular Central Iowa television sports show, Sound Off at 10:30, did it's a combination. It's a very well done show, by the way. Our friend John Sears, formerly of Channel 9, one of the folks over there that helps out with that. They had a tongue-in-cheek version of their thought about the shot clock. They went into the story about the state basketball tournament, and then they stopped talking and just started fidgeting for a minute and 6 seconds or thereabouts, and then came back and finished their thought about it, trying to prove a point.
Mm-hmm.
You're either on the side of a shot clock, or you're either not on the side of a shot clock. I'm going to give you straight facts right here from the state tournament, and I did the research here this afternoon. At the 2019 boys state basketball tournament, between all four classes, a shot was attempted. Every, Mark, what is your guess?
Every game in the boys state tournament?
Yes.
40 seconds.
22.3.
Really?
Yes. Every 22.3 seconds. That includes the Albernette game. The Albernette game is the one that kind of got everybody. And 4A was also not very high scoring, but 4A is never high scoring down there unless you got a Hoiberg or a Harrison Barnes or whatever the case may be. But yes, every 22.3 seconds there was a shot put up.
Interesting.
Now, there are, like Joel said, there are reasons for a shot clock. There are reasons against a shot clock. I'm just going to say this. Do you think Albernette had any shot whatsoever? They had a small shot, and Jeff Christofferson would probably be sitting here between us and saying, yeah, we had a very small shot to beat Grandview Christian. Do you think Albernette had any shot if there was a shot clock?
I think the coach would tell you probably not.
I don't think he'd ever say it publicly.
That was their best shot. Let's
best
put it that way.
Best shot for Albernette was to hold the basketball.
Yeah.
And the best shot for many teams that don't have the talent that others do is to hold the basketball. Now, I am still right now leaning toward no shot clock. If we do have to have one, I think it should be something that's 40 or 45 seconds. But we'll get more into that.
You have a lot of detractors on the text line.
Oh, I know, and I knew there would be.
Let's get to our phone, and then we'll get to our text.
Let's go to Dan in Manchester. He's a high school referee, by the way, and he wants to do chime in about the shot clock. It would also give referees one more thing they have to worry about. Dan, appreciate the call. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I would guess I would be on the side of not having a shot clock. I officiate all levels, 1A to 4A. It seems like the smaller classes, you don't have an issue with it. I mean, you know, when it's 1A playing 1A, obviously, they just go up and down and let it fly. 4A, you know, you got them leaning on each other. It's a totally different ball game. I don't know if that'd be something the state would look into, if it'd be just universal, you know, across the board. Every class was going to do it, or if they just do the top couple classes. I don't know. But I don't think it's necessary as an official, or for one thing, you know, if they hold the ball, the game goes faster and we get out of there earlier. But, seriously, I think just the level of play is going to deteriorate. Just, I think you're going to hurry shots. There's going to be more turnovers.
I would agree.
That's just my take on it. I don't know that it's necessary in Iowa. I know we do a little work in Wisconsin on occasion, and I think they actually voted it in, but have gone away from it.
Yeah.
And they went to 2 18-minute halves instead. So if that would be something to look into, I don't know. But
I would agree about that, and that's one of the things of rules I would like to see change. That's one of them. I think to go to halves would be
I would agree with that. The games we've done seem there's better flow in them. It seems like there's you're not timeout every, you know.
And you're not going to hold the ball for the last minute of the quarter.
Absolutely.
There you go.
I would totally agree with that. But,
appreciate the call, Dan.
Mark me down as a no.
All right. Dan says no, and he's official. 319-366-1600. Appreciate it. Before we get to our next call, I'll give you let's go to the text line.
4702, yes, there shouldn't even be a debate about it. Sean at 1334, yes, time for a shot clock. 1964, as an assistant basketball coach, yes, there should be a shot clock. It's starting to get a little out of hand now per possession, how long teams are holding on to the ball. David and Hudson explained to me how stalling is good for the game. Get a shot clock and set it for like 40 seconds. Kenneth at 2364, yes, we need a shot clock in Iowa high school basketball. What are the arguments against it? Well, I think Dan outlined some. You've outlined some.
Hard for the officials. There's the initial cost. Who's going to run it? Also, when you get to on-the-court situations, I sound like the old man yelling at the cloud today, don't I? You get to on-the-court situations. Face it, it is going to be a whole lot tough. I think the gap between the top teams and the even middle to bottom teams would grow. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
There is also this, Scott, and you know this. Jeff Lender did a story in January. He polled some 50 coaches, and 80% of the boys' coaches, fewer girls' coaches, favor the shot clock. But there was this comment from Todd Tharp of the Iowa High School Athletic Association, and he made a comment that the association's handbook states that we're required to follow the rules of the National Federation of High Schools.
Correct.
As far as each sport is concerned. Unless it is mandated by the National Federation, we wouldn't make an adaptation to our rules.
No, it's going to have to be a national rule before it comes to Iowa. I've been told that. Also been told we could see maybe in a couple of non-conference situations down the road, maybe some experimenting with a clock. We'll see.
There are eight states that have the shot clock that don't care what the National Federation says. They give up their voting rights if they go against the National Federation. And I think Wisconsin is going to add it next year. I could be wrong about that.
All right. Before we get to Sean, Kyle?
Yeah, Dana called in. He didn't want to go on the air because he didn't want to take too much time. He's at work. Didn't want to get in trouble. But what would
Understandable, Dana.
What would you guys think about a shot clock just in the final minutes of each half?
No, it's got to be all or nothing. All or nothing.
Scott, do you think your statistics that you looked up, the fact that a shot was taken every 22 seconds at the state tournament, you think that's reflective of the regular season as well?
I think so.
I mean, you cover 2-3 games a week.
Probably even less than that in the regular season because you don't have all of the pressure and, you know, you're trying not to make the perfect play when it gets down to a situation where it is a close game toward the end.
So I think one or two games along the way each and every year are clouding our thoughts, aren't they?
Could be. And I think, I think the 1A championship and I think a lot of the 4A games at this week's boys state tournament are kind of clouding it a little bit. Let's get to Sean and Marion here before we get to Mike DeCourcy. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. Appreciate your show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So I think we should have a shot clock, maybe 45 seconds, but I'm going to bring something to it. 2 years ago when Marion girls played North Scott, for the championship.
Right.
It went to overtime.
Yep.
And Marion missed the first shot. They hit the next shot, or they might have hit the first shot right off the bat. Marion missed. They got the ball and just stalled it out.
Yeah,
and Marion ended up having a foul, and they ended up losing the game because of that. That's the reason, because it was a sort of a cheap blow. The way to win is to get the lead 5 minutes, just completely stall it out and make the fouls.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reasoning behind myself thinking that.
That's a good point.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. We're going to talk more about this coming up. Go ahead and vote at KGYMradio.com. Should there be a shot clock? And it's going to be in the girls, too. It's not going to be the boys. If shot clock is coming, it's going to be in both boys and girls basketball, as far as the state is concerned. And Mark made a very valid point. It is not coming, period, until the National Federation approves a high school shot clock in the state of Iowa. So that's the bottom line. All right, we'll take a break. We'll talk some college hoops before we go back, talk shot clocks with you. We'll do that with Mike DeCourcy next.
You guys want to do it?
Ryan Peck drives to rural towns every week, bringing music to kids who need it most.
From the top, ready?
He dreams of showing people the importance of music in a child's life. American Family Insurance is helping make that happen right now.
Keep on sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep
American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly.
See Kurt Gustafson at Kurt Gustafson Agency, your American Star Certified Agency. Excellence in customer experience.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin, 53783.
You've spent a lot of years in sweat, working hard. And when you're not doing that, you're focusing on the right things. Your kids, your parents, and paying the bills. Retirement sounds nice, but feels a million impossible miles away. But it's not. Hennings Financial talks with people like you every day. Average folks with a 401k and a bunch of questions. They'd be happy to answer yours. Hennings Financial, a family-owned firm helping regular families retire better. HenningsFinancial.com.
If we build it, they will come.
You don't always notice the things that need to be remodeled or repaired at your business, but your customers do. Keep everything welcoming and looking sharp with Jackson Remodeling and Repair. Whatever your business needs, design, remodeling, repair, they'll take care of it. The owners at Jackson Remodeling and Repair personally visit each job site to make sure things are staying on schedule and meeting your expectations.
Go the distance.
Call them for a quote. Jackson Remodeling and Repair, 319-214-6943.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I didn't find that working behind a desk, so for me it was a pretty easy decision to make. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Iowa Army National Guard. Aired by the Iowa Broadcasters Association and this station.
Back at 3:35 on the Gym Class for a Tuesday on KGYM. Talk about the NCAA Wrestling Championships coming up in a couple of weeks tomorrow. Mark Ironside, the Hall of Famer and two-time national champion, will join us coming up tomorrow. Interesting point here. Iowa State got 9 in of their 10 wrestlers to the national championship. Only Ohio State, Mark, only team, according to Cody Goodwin of the Des Moines Register, they got all 10 in. Penn State did not. Oklahoma State did not. They have 9. So looks like the Buckeyes, the only team with 10. That's wrestling. We'll get to that tomorrow. Basketball, that's been the theme of the show here today, and we're going to talk some college basketball now. Mike DeCourcy set to join us, Big Ten Network studio analyst, as well as national writer for college basketball, joining us here on this Tuesday on the eve of the Big Ten tournament. Well, I guess the penultimate eve, if you will, of the Big Ten tournament. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. This is one of the best times of the year. I keep saying that to folks, and just watching basketball just constantly, whether it be the Southern Conference Championship last night or the first day of the Big Tens, when kind of the pigtail matches are going, it doesn't matter. It's just great. It's great fun.
Yeah, you know, and I'll admit, I went to the first day a year ago as much because it was in New York and it gave me an opportunity to see a Broadway matinee as anything. But this year's games are much more involving and intriguing because of the astonishing depth of the Big Ten. A year ago, we did not have a deep league. It was very good at the top, as you saw, as Michigan made a run all the way to the championship game, but there was not depth in the league. But this year, I will say and have said that it is the deepest major conference that I've ever come across in more than 30 years of covering college basketball.
Mike, Iowa fans not feeling particularly good about their team right now. Can you allay any fears that this might be another one and done for the Hawkeyes?
Well, certainly they have the ability to do better than they've done. I don't think that the timing of the suspension for Coach McCaffrey was very fortuitous. coming at such an important time of the season. That certainly affected their, in my opinion, affected their performance in the two games he was absent. They came back and played fine in the Nebraska game for 39 minutes, and then just melted down. And we saw the same thing happen to Wisconsin within 2 hours against Ohio State, which was as compromised a team in that game as Nebraska was going against the Hawkeyes. But you also had in Iowa so many options, so many opportunities to not give that game up, and they actually did. Unlike some teams that will go to the free throw line, clunk one or two, open the door that way, they actually made most of the free throws down the stretch. It's not like they handed it to them, but they in the end couldn't make the plays they needed to make. And how can I allay their fears? I can just say they need to play better and play to their capabilities. They have not defended well at all over the course of the last 3-4 weeks. They had made progress from last year when they were really poor defensively. They had made significant progress in the first 3 months of the season. A lot of that has declined in down the stretch, and some of it predated Fran's absence. And then if you look at the numbers during his absence, I mean, they were nearly astronomical. So there's no question that that his absence was an impact. And I will be honest with you, I did not like how they handled the interim situation, the two game interim. I just found that to be completely lacking merit. They have three gentlemen who all would have been capable of handling it, but somebody's got to handle it. I mean, somebody's got to be the substitute teacher. If you got a teacher that's going to be out for a week, you send a different sub in every day. You're not going to get as far as if you send the same sub in Monday to Friday. That person's going to get you farther. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean as far as the head coach or the regular teacher, but more so than a series of rotating substitutes.
Very much so. And I was going to ask you if you thought Fran McCaffrey's absence did have an impact on this team, and you've already said pretty much yes, it has had a big impact on this team. I don't think there's any doubt they're in the NCAA field of 68. Can they fall another spot? Can they fall another line? Yeah, they probably could. What's Iowa got to do to improve? How far do they have to go to climb up a couple lines this weekend?
Well, none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. I think that's the first thing you have to remember, that while Iowa's winning, presumably, in order to make progress, others are winning. Others might be losing, so it's hard to say exactly. But when you look at what they have, if they are able to get Michigan, I think that would be a really terrific victim to have in their present circumstance with all the negativity that's gone with the losing streak and all the loss of confidence that goes with losing that lead. I mean, they had been the miracle team before, Northwestern and Rutgers being the most obvious examples, Iowa to a lesser extent, Indiana to a lesser extent in terms of comeback, but certainly played emphatically down the stretch. A lot of that gets misplaced when you do what they did on Sunday, and it comes at the end of a already too long losing streak. So I think that to get Michigan would really solidify them. But honestly, as it looks now, I would say that Iowa looks very much like the kind of team that the committee would be very comfortable putting in an 8-9 game. They'll play an entertaining game. They'll compete. And if they happen to win, they aren't likely, at least in their present circumstance, to scare too much the number one seeds. And that's kind of what the committee wants. They'd rather the number one seed survive to the Sweet 16. That's why they're putting them on the top line.
Mike, that first game Thursday, Indiana and Ohio State, how big of a game is that to both teams?
Well, I said on the, on BTN on Basketball and Beyond Sunday night that I think that both teams need to treat it as an elimination game, but not to tell anybody that they're treating it that way. That it would be a mistake for Chris Holtmann or Archie Miller to go into the press conference and say, you know, we think this is an elimination game, because then the committee thinks, well, if you think so, then we'll do that. And that would make their job easier. So it wouldn't have been this game, this sort of game for Ohio State. Frankly, I don't think they'd be in it if Caleb Wesson hadn't gotten himself suspended. I don't believe that that they would be in this game. But even if somehow mathematically they were, I don't think that they would have lost three games without Caleb, all three. They might have won one, they might have won two, and they would be very secure right now. Now that they've got that loss, their resume was never glistening, but it's always been adequate. Now they've stacked enough losses to you get where you get to the point where people wonder, is it adequate? If it's a great game and Ohio State loses, and let's say it's, I don't know, just pick a number, 75-74, and it's a great game. I'm not sure that would eliminate Ohio State. If they go out and stink it up like they have in some of those games, certainly not Sunday, but in some of the others, then an Ohio State loss might at least put them back to the way toward the back of the line. Indiana has to win, to me. I just don't see how they could get in at 17-15. It's not impossible. There's a lot of sentiment against them, though. I don't know what the committee thinks about would think about 17-15 with six quad one victories, but I look at it as Indiana absolutely having to win. Certainly, Ohio State's position right now is better because of overall record. Indiana's wins are better. They have two Michigan States, a Marquette, and a Louisville that maybe trumps all of Ohio State's best wins, with the possible exception of the at Cincinnati win. But I just think that 17-15 might be a tough bridge to cross in this particular season.
Mike DeCourcy joining us, 3:45, Tuesday edition of the Gym Class and KGYM. Is there a dark horse team out there that you think could make some noise in Chicago coming up for the tournament?
Yeah, like everybody. everybody below the wherever you would draw the dark horse line. That's the amazing thing about this tournament, with the exception of probably Nebraska and Northwestern, which at one time both were very good teams, but injuries and loss of confidence, and they're kind of broken now, so I don't think either of them is likely to do much damage. But you look at a team like Penn State, which had been broken. I mean, they started 0-10 in the league, but they played great of late. Someone told me yesterday that if you go back to around February 17th, you look at the efficiency numbers, offensive and defensive efficiency numbers, that Penn State has outperformed all but one team in the league since that time. That's just amazing to me that they could do that, but it doesn't run against what I've seen. I mean, that team has played tremendously of late. And so they got Minnesota to start. They could win that. Then they got Purdue. Purdue certainly not out of their reach. They almost beat them at home. They had the game. A bad call probably cost them. And then they were very competitive on the road. And then they play Michigan, which they beat. So Penn State certainly is capable of making a deep run. If you asked me to pick one, that would be the team I would circle and say watch out for.
Who do you like to win it, Mike? Would it be Michigan State with Nick Ward back from injury?
Well, if Nick comes back and is able to make a contribution and be willing to embrace a sixth-man role, then I think that Michigan State becomes enhanced not only for this tournament but for the one beyond. Their team, as it was constituted with Nick as the starter, when they brought Xavier Tillman off the bench, he didn't make that big a difference. He made them better defensively, but usually you don't bring in a guy off the bench to fix your defense or to amp up your defense unless you've got a big lead. You're bringing a guy off the bench to punch up the scoring a little bit and cause problems for the opposition. Well, Nick can do that. And if he's willing to embrace that role he becomes look at the ways in which he could damage an opponent. He's one of the best rim runners in the country for a big guy. He changes ends great, and he's really good at finishing. And either once he gets there and posts hard quick, or in progress catching and rolling a layup. He's really good at that. He's also somebody that could come in and, as a fresh player, start to punish an opposing interior defense from the low post, which he's one of the best in the country at. He doesn't have to worry as much about his foul trouble then, because he's not the starter and he's not the guy that needs to be out there. So all those things make him a better player and make Michigan State a better team. But the key to that is, does he accept that role? I can't promise that. And that's going to be an interesting challenge for Tom. One, if he's willing to try to get Nick to accept it, and two, will he be able to convince him that he should?
I find it very interesting, Mike. I don't know what you think, but myself included, nobody mentions the team that tied for the conference championship as a team they would pick to win it all, and that's Purdue.
I think part of it is because when you look at Purdue offensively, they remain a challenged team. Even though their stats are great, you still look at them and say to yourself, well, how are they going to get enough points to get to beat this team? Especially with Carson Edwards over the last month not playing consistently, not shooting the basketball consistently, not always involving his teammates in the action. I mean, he had 5 assists, I think, on Saturday or Sunday, whichever their last game was against Northwestern. He had 5 assists. I guess it was Saturday because they tied for the championship that day. I'm so sorry. And those 5 assists were more than he'd had in the previous 4 games combined. He has not shot the basketball well. So you look at it and you say, okay, how do they get enough points to win 3 games in 3 days? And that's why people don't look at them as the team likely to win. But they're capable of beating everybody here, no question about that. They have a great identity. They play to that identity. They've gotten a really good big man combination built out of the combination of Travion Williams and Matt Harms. And if Carson comes out and starts making buckets, then all of a sudden they become a nightmare for everybody that runs up against them.
Before we let you go here, a national-type question dealing with the NCAA tournament. You had the Virginia Commonwealth.
Here comes the mid-major question,
yes,
Scott.
Yes, you had the Butlers. I am campaigning for Belmont and North Carolina Greensboro to get in. Do they have a shot?
Well, what's your case? I mean, if you're going to campaign for them, are you campaigning for them on the lesser of two evils platform, or – I believe in these guys. What's your case?
I believe in them, and they were told to go schedule people, and they got a couple of Power 5 teams on the road to play. And
didn't beat them.
Well, Belmont beat UCLA. Of course, that was when Alford was
there. They did beat UCLA. You know, what I'll say about those teams is that I think they're excellent. And if they're in there, I'm fine with it. I don't have a problem with it. But I will say that it would mark a complete change of the standard. And I am fully in support. If Buffalo loses, say, and they could, because they're in one of the most balanced leagues in the country. So if Buffalo loses, they absolutely have to get in, and I believe they will. If Wofford had lost last night, they absolutely would have had to get in, and I believe they would have. But there have been seasons in the past, and the team I always circle for this is Murray State in 2015, because we actually had Steve Prohm write a first-person article on SportingNews.com about why his team belonged in the field. And that team went undefeated in conference. I think it was 18-0, but undefeated in the Ohio Valley Conference. Made the finals of the conference tournament. Lost in overtime on a buzzer shot to Belmont, which was the second best team in the league, not a fluke champion. Second best team in the league. Murray State did not lose a game between Thanksgiving and that loss I mentioned. And that team didn't get in. And that's the kind of team I go to bat for, a team that is truly dominant, a team that owns its league and wipes its league up the way Wofford did this year, and then, you know, slips up in a conference tournament on, you know, because the other team's good and plays well, and the pressure's on the team that has been undefeated. And, you know, that team belongs. But Belmont's not that team. I mean, I love those guys. Rick Burt's fabulous for college basketball. This team played four games combined against the second and third best teams in that league. You know what they were in those games? 1-3. That's not dominant. I mean, that's not even excellent. And that's so I can't thump the table for that. If they get in, I love Belmont. They're great. That's fine with me. But I don't have any problem with at all if they get left out.
File that away, Scott.
I will. People are going to know John Morant, though.
Yes, he's terrific.
Hey, Mike, appreciate it. Have fun in Chicago, and always good talking hoops with you.
Thanks, fellas. I enjoyed it.
All right. Mike DeCourcy joining us from the Big Ten Network here at 3:54. Quick break. Come back. A few more texts about shot clocks. I got one more thought about that when we return.
You travel a lot, don't you?
Well, in business, yes. In basketball, never.
Well, if you're traveling for work, La Quinta by Wyndham has what you need to win on the road.
I mean, you get a spacious work area right in your room, plus charging areas for at least 5 devices.
And do not forget their hearty, bright side breakfast with waffles, eggs, and meat.
Oh, that's a triple threat.
It's like having home court advantage even when you're away.
Step up your road game and win at business with La Quinta.
Get the best rate guaranteed when you book at LQ.com.
Swish.
And now, a quick comparison from Grasshopper. When a client calls, what do you want them to hear? Your personal voicemail?
Hey, you've reached Greg's cell phone. I'm away right now, obviously. Leave a message and maybe I'll get back to you.
Or something a little more buttoned up, courtesy of Grasshopper.
Thanks for calling Green Landscaping. To make an appointment, dial 1. For billing, dial 2. To speak with Greg Smith, dial
3. There's no contest. Put your best voice forward with Grasshopper, the virtual phone system for small business. Try it free at grasshopper.com.
Copays, codes, coupons. Searching for savings on prescriptions is so complex, it's like you need a doctorate degree. Fortunately, CVS Pharmacy employs thousands who have one, our pharmacists. Plus, we built a proprietary search tool to help them find you savings on prescriptions. You don't need to know all of that complicated stuff. You just need to know someone who does. Your friendly doctor of pharmacy at your local CVS. Savings vary. Not all patients eligible for savings. Ask pharmacist for details.
20 professionals speaking 9 different languages, serving over 7,000 clients worldwide. That's Community CPA, a global firm located in Coralville and Des Moines. As trusted advisors in tax and accounting, they make even the most foreign and complicated tax matters simple. Trust them with your personal and C-Corp tax filings before April 15th. Call Community CPA in Coralville now, 319-208-3712, to improve the quality of your tax preparation. 319-208-3712. Community.
In sports, as in life, the best rise to the top. That's how college brackets work, and it's how Third Base Brewery has curated their in-house brews for the past 20 years. Only the greatest survive. Maybe that's why friends come back to gather at Third Base Brewery. After all, at Third Base, you're practically home. Stop in and watch the madness unfold at Third Base Brewery, corner of Blair's Ferry Road and C Avenue in Cedar Rapids.
And speaking of the madness, go to KGYMradio.com. All the information about our bracket challenge presented by Imon Communications is right there. Be sure to get your bracket in, and maybe you'll win that $500 prize from Imon Communications. Also, we've got the, in conjunction with CBS2, KGAN, their bracket as well that we're going to have fun with coming up in the next couple of weeks or so. Real quick, a couple things I would like to see before the shot clock mark. Number one, and I've said this on the broadcast all year, get the semicircle under the basket in high school basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Help the officials out with that.
I agree.
So many charges by guys sitting under the basket that should not be a charge. And I think it's time to stop the clock in the last minute of the halves in high school basketball.
After a made basket, you mean?
Or somebody chucks the ball out of bounds, like what Jim emailed us here. Why wasn't that a technical foul against Waukee in that semifinal game when the kid just picked the ball up and chucked it? It got the clock stopped just like they wanted to.
Thanks for all the comments on the text line. I'll read a couple more here before we need to go. 6657, if they don't add a shot clock, the state really needs to emphasize the 5-second count on closely guarded players.
Okay.
John in Dubuque, put me down as a yes. I remember teams stalling way too much when they played Bellevue Marquette when they had Jordan Eggleseder.
Hey, until you've seen a team hold the ball for 7 minutes and 50 seconds with Waterloo East did against Lindmar 1 year through the whole fourth quarter. Appreciate the interaction. Go ahead and vote at KGYMRadio.com. Mark Ironside will join us coming up tomorrow. The Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn is coming your way next.
Doing HVAC work has given you some good opportunities. Now, how about an even better one? Sheet Metal Workers Local 263 is looking to represent residential commercial HVAC workers. Being with 263 means you're part of the union, and union jobs offer